Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James.
The Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner.
What you got cooking?
Ooh, girl, I saw a little movie called Detroit.
Okay.
And it made me thinking of, it made me get to thinking.
Okay, what were you thinking about?
The riots of the 60s and how accurate is this movie? And is Detroit, I don't think it is FUBU. You know what I mean by that?
For us, by us?
I don't think it is. Sorry, Kathryn Bigelow, but that movie is not for us, by us.
Ooh, that is interesting.
Well, what are you doing, my little love child?
I am giving us some updates on Puerto Rico, what the electric situation is like. Are people still in the dark? What are we doing to help our brethren? What are we not doing? Let's just get a little update on what is the climate in Puerto Rico.
Let me know and let me know how I can help. And also, like, I saw Annihilation. I guess I saw a lot of movies recently.
Yeah, you're just moving it up. Does that work?
I am just
moving it up.
Yeah. Okay. I'm moving it up.
There you go.
Moving it up to the movie theater.
Yeah.
And my house. I want to talk about Annihilation. Was it whitewashing? Should we be angry? What should we be feeling?
Ooh, I am feeling titillated and ready to discuss these items. Shall we go?
Is torches up or torches down? Let's find out.
All right.
Hey, girl. Hey.
Hey, what's up? Ooh,
girl, you know, just living my best life.
I know, me too. I'm just enjoying myself. Got myself a little glass of wine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, everybody's got their vehicle. Everyone's got their way of doing it.
Why, when you say that,
I know,
it sounds like
I was trying to be
that
support.
Tone was legit. I don't agree with it, but you live your life. That's what that tone was.
Like, I don't watch The Housewives, but I feel like that was a very housewifey moment.
It was. There was a lot of subtext to that.
I was trying to be supportive in whatever way that I could be.
This is sounding very housewife still.
I'm not drinking.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. I'm not, and I'm recording, but everyone has their own way and approach. I do have an album dropping out in the spring, so
stop
keep
it.
An eye
now
on
you're
that.
Just full on. Am I talking to the Countess Luann right now? Is this a Nene Leakes?
I am the Countess Jimmy Jam. The Countess Jimmy Jam is here.
I know. I believe it. I feel like what's going on.
The Countess Jimina.
So what's new with you, Countess Jimmy Jam?
Well, you know, I went to the movies recently, and did you say oh?
No, I said fun.
Oh, I went to the movies, and I thought you were like, uh-oh, here it comes. I went to the movies, and I saw a little movie called Annihilation.
Which looks really, it's one of those movies where it's like I see the trailer, and I'm like, I kind of get what's going on, but then I kind of don't get what's going on.
Yeah, I remember seeing the first trailer and I was like, trailer, don't show me no more.
And it was
I'm
like,
already
nope.
going. And it was
secrets.
Like, here's a little bit more. But then it was like, anytime one of the other trailers would come on again, I would just like block it all out. And I think none of the trailers spoiled anything. And I thought like there was a Vulture post that was like, we need to talk about the ending. And it has a picture of Natalie Portman like sitting in like a white thingamabob, like a white
hospital
a white little
gown?
Outfit. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, God damn it, Vulture. Clearly, like, you're spoiling all the things. And you know what?
Yeah.
They didn't, because that was the first opening scene.
I am so glad that you said that, because Vulture,
yeah.
I'm looking at you, New York Magazine. Yeah. You've been spoiling some shit on your fucking blog right now. And I am side-eyeing the shit. Like, there's like this popular TV show. This is how this person died.
Oh yeah.
By the way,
I know exactly what you're talking about. The Wire.
I'm not saying anything. I'm trying to.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say who in The Wire. There are many actors in The Wire. It could be the young girl.
Oh, look at you. I see what. Okay, and then also, Every time someone gets eliminated off of RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars, they got to give an interview. But hello, maybe I want to read Vulture and not see immediately who's been eliminated.
Yeah, yeah. They should take a page out of the show that I, Big Brother, where they used, I remember I used to watch all of their shows online, mm-hmm. but they would post like a big picture on their like their landing page, like who just got evicted. I'm like, oh, great. Well,
thanks.
Guess I don't have to.
Thanks, but they've guys. Learned. They've like, sensed. What the hell?
So that does not spoil anything for you, that Natalie Portman being NP, being in her white hospital coat gown. And there's been a lot of conversations about Annihilations. I was super stoked from it from the trailer. I was like, oh my God,
yeah.
Look at these five ladies
yeah.
going up into some science fiction shit. Oh, two out of three of them are women of color.
Love
I am
it.
Here for this. Not,
yes, let's
not just
do
any
it.
Women of color. Tessa Thompson.
And
Gina Rodriguez.
Gina Rodriguez, two heavy ass hitters. Love them.
So I was like, sign me up. I'm in. Buy my tickets. And then like right before, a few days before, there was like a lot. Twitter was an outrage because they felt like the movie had whitewashed two of the characters. So two of the characters. Yes.
What? Just real quickly, since we're on the same topic, I opened up Vulture and there was an article
and asking,
still
mad at you.
is this movie whitewashed? And I was like, ooh, let me read this. They fucking sandwich ass spoilers in the middle. So I had to quickly close that window. I mean, granted, they did put like in bold spoilers, but maybe put that at the top of your article so I'm not halfway reading through it. And then it's like, oh, by the way, here's some spoilers. So you can't finish this article.
You know what? I let that be a lesson to me. I don't read anything about any TV show or I don't read a single article about anything unless, because I've learned. I have learned.
Yeah.
Probably from Vulture.
Yeah, Vulture, you are messy.
But the huge, so the Annihilation is part of a three-part book series called the Southern Reach Trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an adult series. It's not, you know.
I hate the word adult. Like, it's been so co-opted by the porn industry. It's a grown ass book. It's a grown up person book.
I was like, I was wondering where this rage was. I was really trying to find out where you were going with this, and now okay.
You get
like,
it, right?
I really hate
like
that
I feel
word,
like
adult.
It's been like, okay. God damn it.
Like, I never thought about that. Yeah. I just didn't think about that because I was thinking young adult and just taking away the young, but then
and it's
you're
adult.
Right.
It's a grown ass book, but then like James,
there's
I went
no
to go see an adult
movie
this weekend.
I thought you saw, so which porno did you
see?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. True point. So it is a grown person's book series.
Yes.
We'll go with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the director, Alex Grant, who he did Ex Machina, which I did not see, and I know you did see it.
Yeah, I saw that.
He did Ex Machina, and so he directed and wrote this based off of Jeff Vandermeer's book. And so when Alex first got the script, everyone's like, whitewashing. But when Alex Garland first got the script, it actually hadn't even been, when he got the book, it was just like a manuscript. It wasn't the full-on published book.
So the first book of the series.
The first book of the series. So he never read any of the other books in the series. And you only find out the race of the main character, which Natalie Portman plays, you only find the race of her character in the second book. You don't find out that in the first book. So he was like, I have no idea. And so there is that. And he was like, oh, this is really awkward. He's like, I am
Isn't
so
there
against
another
white.
Character too? Uh-huh. Don't you find out the race of another character in the second book as well?
You do. Jennifer Jason Leigh's character,
yes.
who plays, she's half Native American and half white, and you find that out in the second book as well.
Okay.
So those two characters. So there is that anger and frustration. So and then Natalie Portman was like, she was caught off guard by this. She was like, I had no idea. Apparently, nobody read the rest of the books. They just really
Which
focused.
Is like, come on, guys.
But I guess I get it if you're just like, I really want to just be entranced into like this one world there. So there is that point, although the writer of the books, Vandermeer or Vander whatever, Jeff. So Jeff was working with Alex closely on like the script of the movie. So it's like he could have maybe said, hey,
maybe
by the
he
way,
did though.
You know what? And maybe he did, because in part of the conversation, like, Vulture's trying to figure out what happened and, like, what happened?
Yeah.
Who's to blame? And I guess in Jeff's comment, he said something of like, oh, you're just going to really have to defer to Alex about this, as in like, ooh. And it kind of made it seem like he did try to say something.
He probably did.
Yeah. But here's my other, my other flip point for mm-hmm. myself of mm-hmm. why I am not angry about, okay. I'm not angry.
Okay.
Because, and again, also, I'm not angry because, for one, the movie is so damn good. Two,
I mean, I really want to see it.
He made the two other characters. He could have cast, like, five white women, and he
true.
Didn't. And I was really, and like, I even seen Gina Rodriguez. I feel like I rarely see Latina characters, especially in sci-fi, and being as badass as she was.
Yeah.
There is the conversation that, yeah, the main character could have been also Asian American as well. My right. theory is that at this point, like, Alex is like, awesome, I'm doing this movie. Natalie Portman, you in? Boom. He's already got Natalie Portman in.
Yeah.
And by the time the other two books come out, I think it's at that point, like, too hard to bump Natalie Portman. And it's also really hard to bump Natalie Portman because she's got that Hollywood weight behind
true.
It, too. You know?
Yeah. I think all of your points are super valid, and I think since both you and I like to frequent Vulture, we know a lot of like the same points. I think that this one is a gray area. Once though, I feel like I have to just put a disclaimer and say that I am not Asian American.
Yes, and
so
neither am I.
Yeah,
which is why I think like I'm not as. But I put the rally cry out for all kinds of things. Iron Fist, I still haven't watched it, and I work and I have a gig with Marvel. You know, because
yeah,
that should have been an Asian American character.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like me saying that is not. I'm just saying that I don't know the main feelings. But if I did read that there were some plot points that are introduced in the first movie that are followed up by the following books. So there
oh,
is
right.
that connection there. And there's a deficit of Asian American actors, I mean, being
yeah.
portrayed in film. So I feel like that's important whenever there's a chance for that. But there's that. And here's my thing. Because Ex Machina,
mm-hmm.
if you saw it, this director, what's his name?
Alex Garland. He has weird ideas about Asian Americans.
He has weird ideas about Asian Americans and black women.
Mm.
That okay, you know what? If you haven't seen Ex Machina, go
I haven't
watch
seen it.
It.
Don't you dare.
It's not really spoiling anything. But it's a good point. Okay, so let's just say bodies
okay. yes.
of women of color are treated like shit in that movie.
Okay. Okay.
And there's
all
no
right.
explanation, there's no
as
point.
To light. Yes.
And there's no like, oh, we're doing this to prove a cause or anything. It's literally God. And I don't want to spoil. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but just watch it, and then you'll understand that this guy has some biases. He has some things that he needs to fucking work out.
And that's why I never went to go see it, because I remember you having a very similar point when it first came out. I remember mm-hmm. we were talking about this, mm-hmm. and so I was like, not going to see it. But for me, the big pull for this movie was, and this is before the whole entire whitewashing controversy came out,
mm-hmm.
Was for one, I'm also biased, I will admit, because I am ride or die Natalie Portman. I just mm-hmm. am. I am ride or die, Natalie Portman. It was Black Swan. I just, you know, there's a mm-hmm. movie, there's like a certain movie for an actor, you're just like, I'm yours forever. Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of Asian actresses out there that we would be ride or die for if they got chances to act, though, too.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely all about that. I guess I'm pacified because I did get two women of color that Tessa Thompson's character is like this smart ass physicist. And
that's
also
awesome.
Tessa Thompson, transformative mm-hmm. actor. Like
she's amazing.
And she's so, so good in it.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say maybe if in the sequel they would throw. And at first, my experience in the movie was like I'm not, I want to give any spoilers. So, but there's other there's like maybe like 8 characters in the movie and
yeah,
like in total.
Mm-hmm.
And like most of the, I think there's only like 3 white people in it.
Like, are any of them Asian? That's my thing. I feel like, okay, all right. At
there's
least
a, there is a, there is a Japanese actress in the very beginning part of it.
Oh, like one and of the she's the one that was in Ex Machina, who had a silent, subservient role.
Well, I don't think she says a lot in this movie either. So there is that, yeah.
Dude has, I think dude needs to check himself. Because everybody talks about Ex Machina being such an excellent movie and such women empowerment. And I feel like intersectionally, it's terrible. Intersectionally, it's a terrible movie. I enjoyed the premise of it. I enjoyed the movie if I separate myself from the intersectional aspect of it. I just feel like black bodies, especially the way that you portrayed, you know, when you talked about Venus Hottentot, there's some strong parallels in Ex Machina in a particular scene with that, where there's no context and it's just black bodies. And to me, I'm like, yikes, someone needs to check himself. And then the fact that there's this happening in this new movie, which I'm sure is great, and I'm going to see it, and I love Natalie Portman.
He probably thought that he was doing something really dope when he cast those two, because I think any other director, and here's the thing, I think that any other director in Hollywood probably would have cast, like, 4 white women. Like, the fact that there was 2, I was like, what? And so I guess, like, I'm just already excited about that, which I should not be. And it's also, like, I guess... You know, I mean, I think that this goes back to Ghost in a Shell. That was like that actress. There could have been actresses already. Like, because there's this talk that, like, well, there wouldn't have been, there's no actress who could have fronted this movie. Well, if we don't ever give her that opportunity, it's never going to happen, you know?
Right.
We already lost that chance with Ghost in a Shell.
Exactly.
And this was another opportunity. I do think that at this point, I do think that he was further along, and this is me just projecting and assuming, but I think that he was further along, had already cast Natalie Portman, had found out, and then was like, well, I've already got Natalie Portman.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's what happened. I'm not criticizing the movie. I'm not saying don't go see it. I'm saying that I think that directors need to check themselves, and I don't think that he's checked himself with his bias.
He did admit that he's a middle-aged white man and can be at times guilty of unconscious racism.
Ex Machina!
And I think that, like, I guess what I would say is I think it's great that we do keep bringing up these points, because this is where if he, maybe in Ex Machina, when people brought those things up, it pushed him to have to think about how he was casting this to a certain degree with bringing in two women of color. And then hopefully this, by keeping to bring this awareness up, like, he can't continue to make these. And here's the thing, he didn't, like, defend it. He did own up and was like, you know, like, he
I appreciate
is at least,
that. That's a step.
He's at the table. He's at the table. So unlike some people who's just like, oh, I can't. Who was that guy who was like, I can't hire Mohammed so-and-so?
Right. Oh, that was, that what's his face for fucking that biblical movie.
Was it Ridley Scott?
Yes, it was exactly Ridley Scott.
God, and I keep forgetting that I have to side-eye Ridley Scott, because I'm a huge Prometheus fan.
Okay,
I love Prometheus.
I also realized that my point that I wanted to make about Ex Machina is not a plot spoiler.
Oh, good. I didn't think so.
Can I bring it up then?
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you already... Yeah, bring it. Okay, yeah.
It's not a plot spoiler at all, because everybody knows that Ex Machina, what's-her-face Alicia Vikander, plays a robot.
I do now. I'm just kidding. Well, there's that.
James, you knew she played a robot.
I don't think that I really knew anything about the plot. I knew there was a robot. I didn't know she was playing the robot. And I actually just found out she was in the movie when I read the article.
It's the trailers. You watch. She's a robot. And so, of course...
Right. I thought maybe she's just a lady who likes to walk in a different way. I don't know her life. I don't know her story.
She's legit, like, half made out of metal. Anyway, so...
Who am I to judge? It's a cool outfit. I don't know the future.
So, of course... There's trial videos of them with prototypes of the robot. And there's different types of women. And the white women are afforded clothes. There's Asian women that are naked. And the black woman is naked and headless.
Oh. Yeah.
That's
fucked. Do you think he was trying to say something?
No.
Okay. And then because he's not trying to say something, then it's just his unconscious bias mm-hmm. that is just coming up in there. Because obviously that's how he sees... the reason why we POCs are constantly cast as the side characters is that's because how white people see us as right. just side characters in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so then when they're right, and that's what the problem when you have an all white writer's room or all white people telling stories will consistently be on the sidelines because you're only seeing us in a peripheral way.
Exactly. If I was in that writer's room for Ex Machina, I would be like, put a fucking head on her. What the fuck is wrong with you?
And that's your exact contribution.
And then I walk out.
That's it. Yeah. And then like writing credit. And I gave it to Claire. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get you. Well, Aneke, this actually segues into my corner. I want to talk about white people making movies about black people.
Uh-oh, okay. I'm ready to find out. Let's go to Hollywood.
I want to talk about Kathryn Bigelow's Detroit and how it is so not FUBU.
Oh, shit. For us, by us, FUBU.
Mm. So to break that down, it's like I feel like we're just continuing right off of this other conversation. It's segueing so well.
Yeah.
So I saw a little movie called Detroit, directed by
Kathryn Bigelow.
And you know, I remember seeing the trailer and I was so excited that this movie was being made.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of petered out from theaters and no one said anything. Because it had, to me, Oscar bait all over it. And I was like,
it did.
I am so glad someone is telling the story. And then it just disappeared. And it was like, what happened?
It did look tense.
Yeah. And boy, was it. So the reason why I call into question, though, is Detroit FUBU. Yeah. For those of you all who don't know what FUBU means, what does FUBU mean, Aneke?
For us, by us.
Exactly.
Damon Dash.
So what I mean is
creating that brand. Mm, Shark Tank.
He's also got a new podcast out. It's pretty dope.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So is Detroit, especially on the heels of something like, you know, I keep calling it Wakanda.
Yeah.
Black Panther. Which was FUBU. It was For Us, By Us. You know, it was very...
Yeah, I mean, literally all black people call it Wakanda.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what we call it. You mean Wakanda? And that's going to be the moment. Where were you when Wakanda hit the scenes, when we discovered Wakanda?
I was in Oakland. Epicenter. Epicenter in Oakland.
So I was super jazzed, not jazzed, but really interested in this movie because it was talking about the riots and just doing a little back story about
let's
talk about the 60s where the movie is set let's set the scene now.
Motown, I'm dancing, got my beehive and my afro,
and watch out girl, there's a Molotov cocktail because
no,
doesn't matter what city you were probably in from 1964 to 1971 there were mm-hmm. how many riots would you guess were in that time period?
Oh my god, a lot.
Just a ballpark number, just say a number.
150.
750.
What?
There were 750 riots from 1964 to 1971. 228 people were killed. And
oh my god,
12,741 were injured, and
dang,
there were more than 15,000 separate incidents of arson, especially mainly in black urban neighborhoods. So I am like, but what? I did not realize there was that many riots.
Volatile.
It was pretty much in every. And what's interesting is that most of them were not actually. A majority of them were in actually northern states. There were some in the south, but it was mostly in northern urban areas because you got to think. Like even
that's where the conflict was happening.
That's where the conflict was happening. And I feel like we kind of don't really look at those states. We're always like, ooh, the South. The shit has been in turmoil all over. Racism is like white people have not liked black people and had rules against them all over the United States.
It's weaved into the foundation of our country.
Yes. And so the riots generally would erupt usually what would happen is a minority person would be killed or injured, and the black folks were like, we've had enough, because they've had since the abolition
of
slavery.
This sounds very familiar.
Yeah, and since the abolition of slavery, like they were having to deal with a lot of conflicts and a lot of stuff. Just real quickly, some of the main riots that you may have heard of. There was the Harlem riots in 1964. Started on July 16th when a police officer killed a young black boy in Harlem. The violence ended on July 23rd. So that went for a long time. We're talking like, could you, like almost a week of rioting, you know?
That's crazy. And how do you just go to work.
You don't. Like the city is shut down. You don't. Like,
jeez. That's why, that's like, true. You're locked in your house.
Cities were on fire. And, you know, and only one fatality in that one, but there were 144 injuries and 519 arrests. There's the Watts riots, which we've talked about on the show before.
LA.
Yeah, in LA. That's where you get, they were chanting, burn, baby, burn, as, you know, the city was going down. And it took about 13,000 guardsmen to bring the rioting under control. So they sent in the troops into this, which is also very alarming to me. Like, that's such a...
These are people!
Your people, you know?
Right! Civilians of this country!
34 deaths in that one, 1,000 injured, about 600 buildings damaged.
Oh my God.
The New York riots in New Jersey. There was a lot of riots that happened in New Jersey. And also, as we're talking about these different cities, kind of think about... It just, think about the landscape and the people there and what's still going on there in those cities.
Right, exactly.
You know? Mm-hmm. And
that's a good point.
The New York riots happened in 1967. Police beat a black cab driver while trying to arrest him, as you do, I guess, right?
Jeez.
National Guard was called in to help restore order. 23 people were killed in that one, and nearly like $11 million in damage was caused. And so these are the three riots that Kathryn Bigelow references leading up to the movie.
Detroit,
which is so interesting because, like, again, that's why you have to do your own research, because I was like, oh, there were four riots that happened in the 60s. No, there were 750. There was even riots in Portland, in Portland, Oregon.
I mean, we talked about Oregon and what it was founded
like
on.
The 20 black people, like, in Portland rioting. Godspeed to y'all. Like, woof.
I mean, this is clearly, I mean, obviously, everybody talks about the 60s. It was not peace and love in the 60s.
No.
There was a group of people, black people, that were trying desperately to fight for their rights. Like, this is indicative of how sick the country was and is, that we still have to bust out in order to get some attention to the crisis that we're going through.
The 60s were terrifying, and a lot of these were in like mainly big cities, you know, that are left now devastated after it, and some of them never recovered. Like, to me, I'm like this is I understand Detroit now. I absolutely understand Detroit. So in Detroit, the riots it lasted for about 5 days. There were 33 blacks and 10 whites that were killed.
33?
Yeah, 1,100.
That's a deadly ass riot.
1,189 were injured. 7,200 people were arrested. About 2,500 stores were looted. Total property damage was estimated around $32 million. So until the riots following the death of Martin Luther King in 1968, the next year, the Detroit riots were pretty much the largest uprising of the 1960s. So this was like the largest one.
Wow.
So then we get to Kathryn Bigelow. And I was actually really excited about this because I was like, here it is, this Oscar... Oscar nominated.
Yes.
She won.
Yes. So you have, she won for Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker. So you have this, you know, Oscar winning white lady who's telling this story. I always like, ooh, when a white person's telling a story that's not just about white people, I'm like, this is okay. Yay.
It's a little like, yikes. I mean, I do have to give her credit. She's one of the only women that have won Best Director. It's not her story to tell.
But actually, here's the thing. I'm sorry that came out wrong, or maybe misunderstood. I was like, yay. I'm excited. Like, I love it when people are because they have access. They have more access than we do. And they're just recycling all their white stories. But yes, it does need to come from an informed space. So I was actually really like, yay, this is great. This is what she's choosing to... I was really excited about this.
Got it. Yes.
But the main sort of thing, and you'll read a lot of the reviews, mainly is that there's not a sense of a black community or activism in this film.
Interesting.
You don't really get that sense. And it's very jarring. I would say, why I don't think it's for us bias, because, you know, when Ava did in Salem, and when she did Selma, and there was the bombing of the
not Salem. The witch trials.
Kathryn Bigelow maybe should have directed that instead. Selma. Those are two very different.
Yes.
Two horrific moments in time.
Yes.
But, you know, there's the bombing of the church with the four girls. It's horrific, but yet, I didn't feel it was... it felt, again, for us
gratuitous?
By us. Yes. And like, whereas this was just hard to watch. And I don't think that if a black person was directing it, would have been done in the same sort of way, or there would have been a heart and a soul to it. Because,
ooh, interesting.
For example, like, you pretty much just start on the day of the riots. But, you know, 4 years earlier, before the riots, on June 23rd, 1963, nearly 200,000 black people had marched through the city of Detroit, highlighting inequality in the city that black people were no longer willing to tolerate their business as usual. You know,
why don't we start with that? Give it some subtext.
And the reason why they were marching is that Cynthia Scott had been shot once in her stomach and twice in the back by an officer who was not indicted. Sound familiar?
And very familiar.
So it's Detroit has this level of activism that literally the opening of the film is and the opening of the film is the police go in and they raid this party, this underground party where there's a bunch of black people, like, you know, drinking and having a good time, right? So that's the opening scene. But what was
no context?
What was omitted from that is that black businesses, because many Detroit entertainment venues and restaurants during this time, they barred black people and black businesses, and black businesses owners had difficulty getting capital to acquire permits or to be able to open up their own bar to be able to legally have an establishment.
So they had to have house parties.
And so, yeah, I think it was a house party, or it was some sort of building where they did not have the right to be. They just legally didn't have the rights to be there, but they were celebrating two black men from the neighborhood who had come home from Vietnam. And so that was the celebration. And you do see the two men from Vietnam there, but again, there's no context to, like, what's happening. There's just a police raid at this place. And then they're getting carted off in these paddy wagons one by one. And then people are starting to gather and they're like, what the fuck is this? And they're, you know, a bottle gets thrown eventually. But what is happening?
Oh, so that movie's saying that that's the start?
Yes. And that is one of the, but it is one of the starting. It is what then for 5 days later, there was riots after that moment. But what they're admitting, what they're not showing is that what happened is those people refused to go home. They weren't just being arrested and being carted off. They were like, fuck this, we're not going home. And that's when they rallied up the paddy wagons. But there's no dialogue or anything like that to be able to... And there's other dialogue that's happening that... Like, why is that the dialogue that I'm listening to? So
there's no subtext. There's no background knowledge of what was bubbling up to the surface, which you just did in 3 minutes.
Right. Well, after doing some research, and I mean, Catherine, like, if you're doing a movie, do the research, you know?
Research is your friend, you guys.
And then immediately the film just starts to cut to looting and mayhem.
Oh my God.
And so you got, you know, black kids selling bicycles. And like, I will tell you this though, it's terrifying. I was actually in a very bad mood for the next few days after I saw the movie.
No, that's not good.
The images, and I don't think that Kathryn Bigelow was trying to be malicious in what she was trying to do, but it was very triggering and jarring for myself as an African American, as someone who's had the police damn near fucking raid in my apartment twice, you know. It was very triggering and very jarring for myself. And just to see the images of the way that the black people were being treated, which I think was very accurate, I just wonder if it was a black director, how it would have been handled. I just wonder, and I can't help but wonder, you know?
Yeah. I completely agree. I feel like this is one of the reasons, like, if you want to tell a story that is not your story, but you want to shed some light on a community that isn't normally there. Like, for instance, if I'm going to write a movie about Asian American women, I'm not going to just write it myself. Yeah. I'm going to surround myself with Asian American women from different walks of life to give me insight into a community and feelings that I don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're tapping into a deficit by watching this and seeing that there's a hole.
Yeah. And so there is scenes too where they're in this police station, and the police station is just so crowded with so many black bodies that they're just arresting people left and right. And again, not really given any context, because all I've seen is these black people looting. So I'm assuming that, oh, I guess they're looting or they're out, you know, past curfew, which, okay. But like, you know, apparently there was like most of the people, like, let me see. There were 3,200 looting cases, but 60% had resulted in a dismissal, and only 2 had resulted in convictions. Like, they were just really rounding up these people. And there were some black police officers, but they were mostly white, and they had been known to just be have terrible relations, the way that they were dealing with Black folks, that there was a lot of racism in the in the Detroit PD. So
Black cops have implicit bias too.
Sure, absolutely, which we'll get to, which was actually going to play out in the movie as well, and actually what the true story is based on. So really, so Mary Phillips of the Huffington Post, when the movie came out, she called it the most irresponsible and dangerous movie of the year.
So
the movie really probably should have been called The Algiers Motel Incident, because about 40 minutes of the movie take place, and what you've seen in the trailer is the scenes that are happening at the Algiers Motel, and it's very tense, which, I mean, this is a real moment that happened, and even Catherine Bigelow did say that, like, the movie was only called Detroit. It wasn't originally called Detroit, but it got called Detroit for marketing purposes. So they were literally trying to capitalize on this thing that happened, which it sucks because now that movie, the movie can't live up to what was going on in Detroit, because it wasn't ever intended to be. There are the real life. So it's very interesting because it's all, when you're in the outside the Algiers the hotel, these are all real people, like real, based on real characters and real people.
Oh, cool. I mean, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And again, but it's also like, and so one of the guys who's in it is Roderick Davis. He was one of the original members of the Dramatics. And so part of the storyline is almost kind of Dreamgirls, because you're at the big theater and then he's about to perform. And then they're like, you got to get out of here. It's a riot. And he's like, but I want to perform. And so then him and his friend, manager guy, go to the Algiers Motel because they want to, avoid the riots. They're like, we don't want to participate in the riots.
Got it.
We're trying to chillax and, you know, hang out. And so most of the movie takes place at the Algiers Hotel, where which ends up happening is that these three white police officers and a Black security guard played by John Boyega essentially play a scare tactic game, which ends up killing, they murder and like three Black teenagers there through these scare tactics.
And that's a true story.
And this is based on a true story. So, and there's some, obviously some, so well, some of the problems with this is that the way that it's done, it's you're watching like a 40 minute execution of three Black teenagers. Another thing too is in the casting, I did not realize that they were supposed to be teenagers, especially three of the guys who are killed. Especially the,
how old are they? Do they look?
One of the guys looks like he's like, you know, late 20s, early 30s. He's supposed to be a teenager. And so it's like, oh.
Okay, guys, let's cast some teenagers. Yeah. Like,
some of the other.
That's another.
Yeah.
That's a thing for Black people. They age us up constantly. They think that we're more mature than what we are. That's why you use the hashtag Black Boy Joy all the time. We have to. We age our kids up way too fast.
Yeah. And so, and there's also this moment where what brings the police into there is that one of the teens was shooting a starter pistol at the military, because the military has raided Detroit at this point. They're there. And he shoots a starter pistol. Now, that was never, they never found the starter pistol. So by saying that he had shot the starter pistol, again, no one can be killed by a starter pistol, but by saying that, that is you're saying that, oh, that's part of the fact and that's what actually happened, and there was no factual evidence that that was the thing. So it's just, and also, like, you know, some of the scenes are so hard to watch, but yet they didn't go far enough. It's just this really weird sort of area that I think in the hands of a Black director, it would have been handled differently. They did have one of the Julie Delaney. There were two white girls who were also there, who were also there, and they ended up, you know, escaping or getting out.
Yeah, of course.
But Julie Delaney, she was actually there on set, kind of helping to sort of coach things along based on
The real person.
Yeah, but I'm also wondering, as like, I think Roderick Davis is still alive. I don't know. He ended up leaving.
Why wasn't he there?
He ended up leaving the Dramatics. He was like scarred from the events of the travesty that
happened. Oh, wow.
So there is a scene. There's a character, a young girl, 4 years old, Tanya Blanding, who was killed by, in real life, a National Guard. There was this threat that they thought that
a 4 year old,
yes, because they thought that she was a sniper. So there was this rumor,
they thought a 4 year old was a sniper,
she had a light or something. So there was
she's a 4 year old,
yeah. So that is an actual thing that does take place in the film that they did actually show. Which, okay, not like the whole entire movie was bullshit, you know,
right?
But like, it does show, like, I mean, oh my god, the National Guard, like, these are people who are, they're warriors, so they think that they're in a fucking war zone, and there was quote unquote. Right. threats that there were snipers, and they never end up fighting any of these sort of quote-unquote snipers.
That's a cover-up, I probably.
Yeah, to give excuse to be, doing the shooting that they're doing. Historian Danielle McGuire said about 155,000 rounds of ammunition were shot by the National Guard in 5 days.
That's insane. You know, right now, the way that you're telling the story, I would much rather watch a documentary on the Detroit riots and the Algiers Hotel.
Yeah.
I will have to say, really quickly, I didn't want to put all the blame on Kathleen Bigelow.
Yes.
Catherine Bigelow.
Also the writer.
I looked up the screenplay writer.
Yeah.
Mark Bowell, and he's a white guy. So
yeah. So thank you for bringing that up. I mm-hmm. wanted to throw him into the fire, into the arena as well. Because you're right. Not just her. It is also the writing team. Which also, it's like, I hope that there's like production designers who are black. I hope that there's
Where are the black people involved in the background of this movie?
You're right. In the creation of it. Absolutely.
I'm looking right now. And it's like people also searched for, and it's just like a list of
white people.
Mm-hmm.
And like, again, like you said, it's not like these people can't tell the story, but you're going to want to surround yourself with people who are going to help give it some basis and some.
Yes.
Otherwise you're just, Abercrombie and Fitching it with, King of the Jungle sweaters all over again.
Yes.
And you can help.
I mean, don't trust your own ego in telling someone else's story.
Yeah. Two other points I wanted to bring up that would have been really great fodder for this movie. George Edwards, he was a liberal who stepped down from the Michigan Supreme Court in the mid-1960s. He had charged, he was like, the department is fucking racist. The police department is racist. Like there was so many other things that were going on. And also the cops, the three white cops, are kind of viewed in the movie as just bad apples.
I'm sick of that defense.
And almost to the effect of like there's other, their police chief, he tried to reprimand them for being racist, but there's a cop at the end who helps the guy from the dramatics, he helps him escape in the very end. And so it paints this, and I get that what you're trying to say, it just, and this movie's coming out at such a time where it's so relevant. The things that are happening in Detroit, you're like, this
parallels.
Could be, you're like, this could be Ferguson, or these are the same things that are still happening. And that bad apple, and they're very villainous and sick and twisted, almost cartoonish in a sense, not fully cartoonish, but they're so vilified. Yeah. And it kind of just makes it seem like they're just an anomaly and the rest of the cops are just trying to do their job. When the case, there's history that shows that like those cops are fucking racist as fuck.
Yeah, it's all about understanding. It's because everybody wants to put the blame on somebody else. It's scapegoating. Yeah. When it's the only way that we can really try and fix this is understanding that it is insidious in all of us. We all have it, especially if you're benefiting from privilege. If you're a police officer, no matter how nice you are when you take your clothing off, when you are with your family, you may feel like you don't have a racist bone in your body. But once you put that uniform on and you're patrolling in an area and you have your lizard flight or fight mind kicks in, then you start basing down into what is woven into the fabric of our country, which is racism.
Yeah.
So it's more complicated to say that it's within all of us. And clearly what you're saying with this movie is they dumbed that shit down.
Yeah,
they dumbed it down.
Yeah. And I feel, here's the thing. I think that this movie is for white people made by white people. I think white people should absolutely see this movie because it is going to show you'll see the parallels to what's happening today. And for you, that will be helpful. And you'll get to see the images it's very jarring. I think that white people should absolutely see this movie, or non-black people should absolutely see this movie, and I think it was made for white people by white people, and I think Kathryn Bigelow is trying to draw the parallels, and I think they're both trying, and the writer guy Boal are trying to draw those parallels. I just don't think that black people need to see those parallels told in that way. We get it, and we get it in a deeper sense, in a more cultural sense, because the People's Tribunal, as the writer of the Huffington Post brought up, there was a People's Tribunal that happened Right after the massacre that happened, and Rosa Parks, essentially a bunch of black people got together and they held their own trial because they held their own trial essentially of charging these and just trying to get all the facts together. And and so they held their own trial. It was in a church. Rosa Parks was part of the tribunal. John O'Killens, black bookstore owner Edward Vaughn, who he owned one of the only black bookstores in Detroit, which ended up getting bombed by police and burnt down by police.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And so they found obviously the police officers guilty, and this led to the actual trial, like the trial actually happening. So that would have been a really beautiful moment to also actually
happen.
And so, like, again, you'll see all the violence that happens to all the black bodies in the writing. It is a fucking war zone. Catherine Bigelow does paint a war zone, and you're like, oh my
god, at war.
The 60s.
She's good at war movies,
and it shows. Like, that's what it was like. Like, the 60s were fucking terrible. These people were living in a war zone. They
scary.
Had curfews.
Yes.
It was absolutely terrifying. But those scenes, they don't have any connection to them because we don't get to know those people, those struggles, those journeys. I mean, that would have been a beautiful story to have told as well. And last thing I just wanted to close on is that it made me just realize why black communities and neighborhoods still to this day are met with such... Why we're still struggling? Because
This wasn't long ago.
All the riots that had happened. There was from the 1940s to the 1970s, the property values of black homes barely went up between those time periods. And they've gone up maybe 4 or 5% on an average. And so, like, no wonder Detroit is still like where it is, because after it's so,
because what happened,
and it's not so quick to point. You know, people want to know, why are they destroying their neighborhoods? This is how fed up people were, that they were like, burning it all the fuck down because it's all bullshit. And when you tell a story without that context, you're not telling the full story. And I would love to see Ava DuVernay take over the Urban Riots film, or Barry Jenkins, or Ryan Coogler, or Tyler Perry. I don't know. Lee Daniels. How about Lee?
But still, he'd probably get the nuance.
Well, yeah, he'd get it. I mean, I just would love
some of it. Maybe, I don't know.
750 riots, and this is just a tip of the iceberg, right? So there's so many more other stories out there to be told that's a part of our history that I did not know, and I think probably many of you did not know.
Amen to that. Like, give us a chance to tell our own stories, but also thank you for shedding light on the stories, those of you that aren't a part of the community, but make sure to surround yourself with people who are a part of that community to share that story.
I would say it's a swing and a miss. I think that's two outs for white directors, right? Alex Garland from the first inning, and Catherine Bigelow.
Oh.
So
that's
two outs for white people. Good luck. Go get them next time.
Good luck. Well, thanks, James. That was really good. Always illuminating. I didn't want to see this, and now I feel very much stronger that I don't need to see this. And hopefully, I'm praying that Catherine Bigelow will pull herself up by the bootstraps, surround herself by good people with good stories to tell, and win another Oscar deservedly with the right story, with the right voices.
And if there are any documentaries that you all know of, I had a difficult time finding ones, but I would love to I want to soak up so much information about our history. So tweet at us, let us know in the Corner Kids Facebook group.
Which pop culture icon is ripe for a comeback?
What movies should I go see this weekend?
What should I binge watch next?
I like to Hulu and chill. Am I a monster?
Yeah, what's a great French film about lady cannibals?
For answers to these questions and so much more, come on over to Pop Rocket, a pop culture roundtable show with me, Guy Branum,
Winter Mitchell,
Margaret Wappler,
and Karen Tongson.
Catch us every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you decide to get your podcasts. I'm not going to judge.
Give it away, give it away.
away, give it away now. Give it to me, Aneke.
All right, I'll take that segue. So we got the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and we're going to be diving into what's going on with Puerto Rico.
Ooh,
notorious for spicy food.
People fucking, yeah, that's exactly it.
Is that a clumsy? Does that work?
No, it works. You know what, Aneke, I see what you did there. You connected the dots.
Okay,
I threw something and you yes and it and made it work. So I thank you.
You know, I try my best. I do what I could do.
Okay. I always want to call you my sister brother because we're like sister brother.
I'm down for that. I'm picturing that picture of us with our backs back to back, smiling in the camera. Yeah. Very sister brother.
Sister brother. We can get our own spinoff.
Okay, you ready for some updates?
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, I wanted to check in on Puerto Rico because a lot of times when a big disaster happens, we hear about it, we talk about it, then we forget about it. And it's been close to 6 months since Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico. And I wanted to do a little update on what's going on. As many of you guys know, the power went out. And let's just check in and see where they're at.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so I was reading in Color Lines, and great, check it out. Excellent fucking blog. I think I've used some of their articles before. A lot of POC issues, LGBTQ issues, world round, but mostly focusing on the United States. This article written by Ayanna Bird, and it's basically kind of talking about what's happening in Puerto Rico now. I believe it was published 2 days ago on the 26th. So you will be listening to this on, what is that, Friday?
March 2nd.
So a couple days.
It's still fresh. Yeah.
It's still fresh. So the Army Corps of Engineers of the United States, they've removed 1,000 people who are contracted to restore power in Puerto Rico. They're calling it a responsible drawdown. Meanwhile, there's still 14% of residents who are without power in Puerto Rico. In 14, you may think like, oh, that's under 20. That's fine. They'll deal with it. But that's in the hundreds of thousands of people still. We're forgetting that Puerto Rico is a huge island filled with millions of people. So 14% of people who are without power, we're talking no light. Like right now I'm sitting here talking to James with my microphone that is powered, my laptop that is powered, the lights are on that are powered, the heat is on.
If you need to go warm up something in the microwave, you could do it.
I can do it.
On my TV, gotta
do it. I could go into my refrigerator and grab something cold. I'm talking to you through the power of all of that. If I needed to plug my phone in, power.
You could do it.
We forget.
And you've been able to do that for 6 months. For 6 months you've been able to do that.
Exactly, comfortably. Like, I think about this, and why are we letting this happen? Like, if 14% of New York was out of power, would we let this happen? If 14% of California was out of power, would we allow this to happen?
Even if it was, like, in New Orleans, well, for 6 months. I don't think for 6 months.
Not for six months.
They did let that happen for a while, but not 6 months.
Exactly. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because I think that there's a disconnect about how Puerto Rico is related to us.
Yeah.
A lot of people, Puerto Rico, West Side Story, it's an island. Puerto Rico, just as a reminder to those who aren't fully aware, is an unincorporated territory of the United States, okay? And an unincorporated territory of the United States is an area controlled by the United States government, which is not part of the United States, which means in unincorporated territories, the U.S. Constitution applies only partially. In the absence of an organic law, a territory is classified as unorganized. In unincorporated territories, fundamental rights apply as a matter of law, but other constitutional rights are not available. Selected constitutional provisions apply depending on congressional acts and judiciary rulings according to the U.S. constitutional practice. That's from Wikipedia. So basically what it's stating is Puerto Rico is owned by the United States, so therefore it is a part of the United States. It is not a state, though. That would be an incorporated territory, I believe. I think that is the Hawaii.
It's like having a 16-year-old foster kid who they emancipated themselves and have their own apartment, but you're still technically responsible for them
or something. No, you know, like, not even that. It's like we went in, we're like, you're ours, and we're only going to give you some of our rights.
So it's like you found a kid and you're like, it's worse than that. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Here's the kid. Here's little Puerto Rico. We were like, you are ours. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, but you go live over there in that, you know, shack and fend for yourself.
Exactly.
But we adopted you and you're like not giving us anything.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And I wouldn't even, I would say big Puerto Rico because it's a lot. And
it's true.
And it's a big grouping of people that are, they are a part of the United States, but we, because of this weird unincorporated territories, weirdo, let's face it, probably racist rules. I haven't looked completely into it, but I'm sure that there's some racist issues going on. They are only allowed some of our attention.
Sure. Yeah. And well, and I know there's some politics too about, there are some people of the Puerto Rico who do want to become a state, but there are some people who are just so like, we don't want to be part of, you know, the state.
Yeah.
But
it's like pick or choose. Right now they're in fucking limbo. Like either let them be their own country.
Let
Puerto Rico be Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Or let Puerto Rico be state Puerto Rico and get 100% like full rights that other states get, like with voting and proper aid and all of that, you know?
And I agree. And it's like, if until we let them loose and it's free, then we need to own up our shit onto them.
Exactly. So, basically they've been out of power since September 20th when, Hurricane Maria hit. So what has been happening? So there's two corporations. There's Fluor Corporation and Power Secure. Those were two companies that had contracts through the Army Corps to work in cooperation with the island's government, their government-run power utility to fix the electrical grid. So these are two corporations that had contracts to come in and help fix, restore the power. Mm-hmm. There were 6,200 people from these corporations that were on the job. But as of right now, Fluor only has 1,600 on the job because its contract is nearing the end. And Power Secure's contract is going to end April 7th. Fluor arrived and I'm going to butcher this name of a city, but it's Jayuya. So Fluor, the company, arrived in Jayuya a month and a half ago. I really want that to sink in. They arrived in this city a month and a half ago, meaning that this fucking city has been without people helping them for four months.
Four months.
Yeah. Mm. So they arrived a month and a half ago to help with the electrical problems. So the mayor of Jayuya, and I'm sorry if I'm super Jayuya pronouncing it wrong, you guys. His name is Jorge L. Gonzalez Otero. He told the New York Times that the contract was over and they left everything half done. Imagine I have people here without power for 5 months who are 80 years old, disabled, bedridden, and they were just beginning to see people 50 meters away get their electricity back. They are now growing desperate. Like, can you imagine that? You see people starting to get their electricity and the people who are supposed to help you just go?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And like, who, like, I can't even imagine I don't even know how you would start about trying to get that fixed. Like, I don't know electrical shit. I don't know.
Right.
Like,
I wouldn't know what to fucking do. Like, the speakers on my computer were not working. And I literally was like, Andrew, help me. Like,
yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is that like, I think we have a humanitarian, you know, response to this because, I mean, we in America are also one natural disaster away from this happening to us.
This
you know?
Is America.
Like, I mean, like somewhere in like the, and like it could happen. You
statewide, stateside. Mm-hmm.
Stateside, yeah.
So FEMA stated that this is, they're basically saying that this is not poor work management, but proper timing behind the workforce reduction. So Aisha Tribble, who oversees the power efforts of FEMA, stated that 86% restoration, we are starting to shave off people, she said. In any normal course of restoration, you ramp up until you start getting your successes, and then you begin to start ramping down. I have a bone to pick with that because I feel like you don't leave a job until it's done.
Yeah, that makes sense. I couldn't imagine going to work and be like, nah, that's good enough.
Bye. You know? You don't just like drop it. If you're eating an ice cream cone, you don't drop that shit on the floor.
Well, some people do. And I see them. That's and gross. I side eye them. Mm-mm. And I'm like, y'all need to throw your shit away or finish that.
Right. I mean, electricity is a huge thing. And I really want to emphasize the fact that this isn't like, one, the U.S. should be lending aid to foreign countries, obviously.
Yeah.
But, two, this is not a foreign country.
Nope.
I think a huge majority of Americans don't realize that Puerto Rico is literally a part of America. And the fact that we have a president who went there and just tossed some fucking paper towels
toilet
in their
paper
faces,
towels,
like that's insulting to the people of America. I don't know. I think that we need to focus on this, even if 14% is a small, but sounds small. I do want to remind everyone that it is 100,000s of people, and usually those people are the poorest of the people.
And it's too many. And it's like you said, it's too many Americans. Mm-hmm. It's too many people that we have a responsibility to.
Mm-hmm. So I can't end this corner without giving off some organizations that are giving some help to Puerto Rico.
Before you end, can I just throw in there? I heard about a guy who's really amazing, who if you're in Florida, listen up for this guy.
Okay.
Because Philip Levine.
Okay.
Philip Levine, he's the ex-mayor of Miami Beach. This guy's like a millionaire guy. Just an amazing philanthropist, Democrat, progressive guy, who the kind of person that you're like, yay, I love that you have a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's not even a mayor right now. He's running for governor of Florida.
Okay.
And which is huge.
It's Jeb country.
Yeah, and this guy, like the mayor of Miami Beach, like he's a huge environmentalist, and Florida needs that. And that was his campaign for Miami Beach that he was running on. And he's really able to bridge like Democrats and Republicans, because there's a lot of like
bipartisan
issue. Yes, and he's like, listen, these are just like things that we all need to get on board with, because this is the thing that's happening. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he got all of his like millionaire, billionaire friends, and they were flying like as soon as it was happening.
Yeah,
flying like people and resources and companies and engineers and electricians and
to
like
Puerto Rico?
Supplies before the U.S. was even like
amazing.
I just wanted to point that out of just like that. If you're in Florida, keep an eye out for him. Help out on his campaign.
What was his name again?
Philip Levine.
Philip Levine.
Yeah, ex-mayor of Miami Beach. He's a dope guy.
Right on. Everybody show up and vote. That is another thing. We got to vote in this in 2018. Come on. So just a couple of charities to donate if you feel like I want to do something. This is from the New York Times. Unidos by Hispanic Federation. A coalition of elected officials in New York and Puerto Rico joined the Hispanic Federation, a Latino nonprofit, to launch this relief fund for Puerto Ricans affected by Maria. Proceeds will go to community and civic organizations in Puerto Rico, the group said. Dominica Hurricane Relief Fund. The government of Dominica is collecting donations through Just Giving, a crowdfunding website. The money will go towards temporary roofing, blankets, and non-perishable food. Fund for the Virgin Islands. The Community Foundation of the Virgin Islands, a nonprofit, is collecting donations through this fund, which will be used both to support short-term relief efforts and to enhance the well-being of future generations. And Unidos por Puerto Rico, this initiative from Beatrice Rosello, the First Lady of Puerto Rico, enlist private sector help in providing aid to those affected by Hurricane Irma and Maria. Donations are accepted through a variety of means, including PayPal. There's also AmeriCare, the Relief and Development Organization, which provides health services to those in need, said that it was working with officials in Puerto Rico to stock emergency shelters with medical supplies. Earlier in this week, it had, this is old, very old, but it airlifted $1.8 million worth of medicine and supplies to the U.S. Virgin Islands. And not, I'm not, when I say old, I mean just a couple months old.
But, it's like this was like 5 years ago.
Yeah. So basically, I'm going to link all of these articles in notes. Use these links, support these causes. There's a million other causes in here as well that you can support. Remember, the job is not done until everyone has power. And if you have a hard time wrapping your brain around it, just imagine whatever state you're in, and if 14% of that state was out of power, what would be happening? So we need to treat our fellow humans, fellow Americans.
Fellow people. And like, who are you that you are not into all these things? Can I talk about you for a second? Yeah. You need to get in. Well, whatever the word is,
I'm trying to get everybody.
But whatever your hangups is, it is not about you. The point of the blank is Puerto Rico needs your help. So go get your credit card and run to this website. And I mean, like, even like $25 goes a long way. $50, like, everyone's got something.
$10, $5.
I would agree. Like, I try to, I'm putting this out there now, because if I put that out there, then I hold myself accountable for it. But I'm trying to do monthly donations to somewhere every month. And
James,
thank you for reminding me that Puerto Rico is gonna,
You just reminded me of something that I do with my friends that I want to suggest that all of you guys do.
Ooh.
Including you, James. It's been,
okay, all right, I'm ready.
It's been amazing. So me and a group of friends get together and we call it Self-Care Gift Club. And it started as like a Christmas exchange where we all get together and we do like a, everybody brings like a $10 gift, and it's like self-care stuff or whatever you want it to be, just a $10 gift. And you kind of switch it around. And then you each, we pick a cause and we each donate $10 to that cause as well. So
my heart just went like, oh, that is so sweet and amazing.
Yeah, we had our third one last week, and we pick a new cause every month. And one, you feel good because you're hanging out and you're drinking or doing whatever with your friends. If you don't drink, you know, you can go eat pretzels or walk around the lake or exercise, but you're hanging out. You get a little gifty. You get, you know, a little something tchotchke for yourself. And then you're also donating $10, which, depending on the size of the group, can turn into a substantial donation to a cause of your that you pick. So
I think that's great. And it gets more people involved who probably wouldn't even have it on their radar to get involved.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, I think we, you get, maybe it's because we're in our 30s now. But like, you start kind of looking back and you're like, oh, it's our turn. There's more. We got to start picking up the slack. Like, it's our turn. You start.
We're the adults now.
We're the adults now. And we got to. Well, I mean, are you talking about porn or?
Ah, I know.
Are we adulting right now? Now I can't even say the term adulting. I'm adulting right now. Oh, God. Put it away.
I know. Exactly. Zip your pants up.
Well, anyways, zip your pants up. Get your checkbooks out. Get with your friends. Self-care holiday. And help people out.
Amen.
In a world dominated by dude bro movie podcasts. A world where Casey Affleck has an Oscar and Angela Bassett does not. Only one podcast is brave enough to call bullshit. Who shot ya? With Ricky Carmona.
A lot of people don't know Porgs, Puerto Rican.
Alonzo Duralde.
I would eat Oakjaw.
April Wolf.
I want to interrupt and say that the fish man was real sexy.
Drea Clark.
I have a real soft spot for King Kong.
And women of color.
I was like, damn!
Ryan Coogler got final cut.
Coogler got final cut?
I just felt like the film was so sour and so completely irrelevant to basically anything in life.
Who Shot Ya? Listen every Friday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Aneke, I would like to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for listening, for being all fabulous.
Oh my God, thank you, you guys.
You have
seriously
so many options and choices. There's so many new podcasts out there. I think there's like 500 billion. I think that's the number that I saw.
That sounds accurate.
I think everyone and their mom has a podcast. I think my mom, her podcast is launching in 3 weeks, actually. So,
wow, okay.
You never know if my mom, she probably could. But I wanted to give a shout out to you. You also show us so much love out there on the iTunes.
Yes.
Leaving us reviews helps other people find us as well. I wanted to read an awesome new review we had from Esme K. Esme K said,
okay,
the hosts are like really good friends of mine who actually aren't, but they are best friends with each other. This friendship really shines through this show. They are so supportive of each other. They always ask us to question society and common and uncommon beliefs. They make my day with their easy humor and bring up issues, ideas, events, and people everyone should know. This show is not only for an American audience either. It is relatable to all people who want to end oppression and have true equality and understanding with each other.
Yes!
Thank you for that 5-star rating. I also love the plug that it's not only for Americans, because I don't know how relatable we are to our international listeners.
I don't know.
So.
It's good to hear from someone who would know that we can be relatable to outside of our country.
Yeah. So head to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast, leave a review. Again, it helps other people to find us. And we appreciate the love. Like sometimes it's hard when you're in the arena, we get different comments from different people. And so it's also just nice to hear some love, and it helps that you have no idea. It helps to give us the fuel to keep going on.
It makes us feel really good.
Yeah.
You can tell that we're gaining some speed because we're starting to get some side eyes of our own, which we appreciate.
Yeah.
And so those of you that are out there supporting us, that are new to the podcast, that are supporting us, that are old to the podcast, that are supporting us, that are medium to the podcast, to supporting us, thank you.
Yeah.
It's legit just me and James talking to each other. Without you guys, it would just be me and James talking to each
other. Which sometimes it is, and we're like, we recorded that. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we are your friends.
Yes.
Thank
you.
Yeah,
right. We are your friends. Absolutely. What's going on in the Twitters?
We got a tweet of the week.
What they saying? What are the kids saying on the Twitters?
This one is from @wenttherepod.
Yes.
And they wrote, thank you, Minority Corner, for repeatedly reminding us how whitewashed the history we're taught is.
Oh, yeah. And this week we told you how whitewashed the movies are.
Exactly. So thank you for recognizing that. We're just trying to recorrect. We're trying to do a little Howard Zim for you guys.
I don't think I know what that means. Hans Zimmer?
Oh, he's an excellent... Howard Zinn.
Oh.
He is an excellent writer. He wrote let me just make sure I get it correct.
Look it up.
He's a writer. He wrote, oh my God, People's History of the United States.
Oh.
Look it up. Read it. He tells the alternative history of the United States. Basically, what is not in your history books. He's excellent. So basically, I'm just saying, we're trying to follow in his footsteps by letting you guys know what is not normally shared.
And I'm learning right along with you. I had no idea about that guy. So we're in this together.
Yes, we are. Because we don't know everything.
Oh, we don't. And I'm learning right along with you. Take my hand.
Me too.
Take a stand. Shake your hand with your fellow man and woman.
Ooh, freestyle.
Well, actually, I'm just repeating Patti LaBelle's ad libs on her where my backup singer is. She's like, shake a hand. Shake a hand with your fellow man. Where my backup singers.
Look it up. Oh, one other thing I wanted to bring up that's happening on the Twitters.
Oh, what else?
We got subtweeted by @paddleya. I want you guys to check out what Paddle Yaw wrote. Basically, listed some museums that provide information on slavery and some hyperlinks.
Whoa.
So definitely check that out. They linked us as well. So get that information there. There's some great links for you to follow up on.
I love that because it's in direct conversational link to our episode last week where we were talking about slavery.
Exactly.
And between last week and this week we were talking, I am, just so grateful to be alive right now in this time period. I'm glad it's not the 60s. I'm glad that it's not slavery. Man. It's not a perfect time to be a black person, but it's a better time.
No. Yes, it is. That's why that game where it's like, what time period would you want to live in is never really like...
I now can't go...
I always have to be like, only in style.
Yeah, I mean, I...
Only in clothing and hairstyle.
Yeah, I literally now, it's I maybe 80s. I could go back to the 80s, and I was born then. So, I mean...
You were alive then.
Just so I can go back and watch, like... I can't even watch The Cosby Show. Damn it. I don't want to go back to the 80s.
I mean, then you could. Nope. Blissfully unaware.
No, I know too much. I'm going back with my mind that I know now. So, to the 90s. That's us. I don't need a lot of gas.
We were there.
I know. I don't need a lot of gas for my time machine. I guess this way I could go to, like, raves, you know?
I would like to go to specific events. Like, I would like to see Prince in concert. I would like to be a fly on the wall in ancient Egypt time just so I could see what it looked like. I wouldn't want to interact.
Thought you were going to say a fly girl, but that too.
I don't need to be a fly girl.
Oh, I do. Spandex. Move over, Jennifer Lopez.
I mean, yeah, you can do it.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Not limiting your dream.
I am time traveling to go be a fly girl. And I would have the career of Jennifer Lopez, but like...
Yes!
Black.
To get involved in this conversation on Twitter, you can follow us on Minority Corner with a K.
Yeah, which time period, which moment in time would you go back to? Let us know. Get involved in the conversation. Tweet at us.
Yeah.
Well, and thank you to Brianna for our music. And thank you to all of you for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together,
we're the majority.
We're the majority.
Pew, 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 pew. Those are like celebration guns.
Oh, I thought it was like the Jamaican reggae, like pew 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 pew.
Yeah, it's that.
Pew.
Yeah.
Bye, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.